Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, reaction to the recent deadly attacks in Syria, the debate over Britain leaving the European Union, an invention giving homegrown a new meaning, and two of country
Every
music
six
superstars.
Weeks, this cube can grow between 100 and 200 vegetables, depending on the size.
And two of country music superstars pay tribute to blues legend B.B. King. It's right here on The Voice of America. The United States and Russia have responded to a series of deadly bombings in Syria. Multiple attacks in Damascus killed at least 83 people, while bombings in homes killed another 59. State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins joins us on the line to talk with us about the response. Welcome, Pam.
Thank you.
Say, what is the U.S. saying about this violence?
Well, the U.S. has strongly condemned these series of bombings in Syria. These, of course, were claimed by the Islamic State. In a statement, the State Department called the attacks barbaric, and it also urged all parties to the conflict, particularly the Syrian regime and forces supporting it, to support a cessation of hostilities that can begin to de-escalate the civil war.
And meanwhile, Russia is also speaking out about the attacks.
Absolutely. In a statement, the Russian Foreign Ministry said the attacks need an adequate reaction from the international community. The ministry also said that the attacks were aimed at derailing peace efforts.
Now, this all comes in light of U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry announcing this so-called provisional agreement, and it has been reached with Russia on the parameters of a ceasefire. Could you tell us about this provisional agreement, please, Pam?
Yes, indeed. This provisional agreement was first announced by Kerry while he was in Jordan yesterday. We don't have all of the details, but basically Russia and the United States, of course, have been chairing a ceasefire task force, and this is a group that is under the International Syria Support Group, which is the UN-facilitated group that had been working on getting talks on a political transition in Syria. Now, Kerry and Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov have been holding a series of phone conversations on this issue involving a cessation of hostilities. Of course, an initial ceasefire agreement was due to kick in on Friday, and these were based on the parameters of the International Syria Support Group meeting in Munich. And this was an effort to allow an expansion of humanitarian aid to be delivered in Syria. They, of course, missed that deadline, and now we have word from Kerry during his stop in Jordan about this possible new cessation or a partial ceasefire. And Kerry said that President Obama and Russian President Putin may speak about this issue in the next few days to try to come to terms on this new agreement.
Would there be anybody else involved in discussing this agreement besides the U.S. and Russia?
Possibly so, because this has been an issue that, of course, has been of concern for the entire International Syria Support Group. One of the ongoing issues has been with Russia and Iran supporting the Syrian regime, and the U.S. and other members of the group backing the opposition. There's been a difference of opinion on the parameters of a ceasefire. There is general agreement on a ceasefire, not including the Islamic State and the al-Nusra Front, but there has been some concern about the Russian-backed Syrian regime's bombing around Aleppo because there are elements of al-Nusra there, and there has been some concern that Russia might use this as an excuse, basically, to continue to go after other members of the opposition that are based in that area.
And Assad has says that he is not going to stop fighting so-called terrorists, but he uses that word for rebels.
That is an ongoing concern because there is a different definition of who terrorists are. The United States and most of the members of the International Syria Support Group, with the exception of Russia and Iran, have been targeting the Islamic State and al-Nusra Front, whereas on the Syrian side, with Russia and Iran, there's a broader definition that takes in some of the rebel groups, and some of these groups are part of the opposition that the United States considers part of the peace talks for a political transition.
Well, thank you very much, Pam.
Thank you.
Time for a look at what's going on the web today concerning this story. And joining us with the details is social media reporter Andrew Palchevsky. Welcome, Andrew, as always.
Thank you for having me. Well, that Syria story is, of course, a big topic of conversation on social media. You have a lot of people asking a lot of questions about when this could be implemented, a potential ceasefire, what that would mean. And you have a lot of talk about the different players throughout this whole ceasefire negotiation. You have the United States, you have Russia, you have Syria, of course, and then the region, the instability in the region. So there's a lot of questions being asked, but that's one of the great things about social media is that people who have these questions can ask them and get responses from experts who are also on social media. So you have this kind of mix of the general public, experts in the subject matter, journalists all commenting on this, talking about this. So it's a great way to spread information as this story progresses.
You also have to be careful, though, because sometimes people put out disinformation on purpose.
Exactly. And that's one of the ways that social media can be a very powerful tool and sometimes a very negative one through misinformation.
And you have something else, some good news about baby pictures.
Yes, baby pictures. Saint West is the son of Kim Kardashian and Kanye West, and Kim Kardashian has released the photos, the first photos of Saint West, who was born just a few months ago.
A very cute baby, you
very,
tell me?
Very, very cute baby. A lot of people sharing it around, noting that.
I think we knew that was going to be that way.
Yes, for sure. But the one thing that I thought was very interesting is in the post that Kim Kardashian shared this, she said, "My father would have, today would have been his birthday. Her father died in 2003 of cancer." And she said he would have loved nothing more than to spend time with his grandchildren and get to meet his grandchildren. So that's why I'm releasing this photo today in honor of him. So I thought that was a very nice, you know, there's a lot of talk about how social media is very calculated, especially among celebrities. And this may very well be a calculated move, but it was a very nice one, I thought, and very heartfelt one.
Sort of bittersweet, though.
Bittersweet, for sure, for her. But nice that she's able to share that with her fans, and everyone around the world is loving the photos. And
okay.
So congratulations to
them. Well, I'm
going to
go look at him after the show.
Yes, and he's got his hands raised and like a little, you know, I did it. You know, he's already a couple months old, and he's already well better off than a lot of people around the world. So.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Astronomers from Vanderbilt and Harvard universities have discovered a binary star system nearly 10,000 light years from Earth, where it takes 69 years for one of its stars to eclipse the other. But once it does, the eclipse lasts for 3.5 years. The researchers described their findings in a paper that's been accepted for publication in the Astronomical Journal. This star system, which has no official name, has set a new record for having both the longest duration stellar eclipse and the longest period between eclipses in a binary system. Until this discovery, the previous record holder was Epsilon Origae, an eclipsing binary system that is only 2,000 light years from Earth. That star system's yellow giant star is eclipsed by its normal-sized companion, that's slightly bigger than our sun, for 640 to 730 days every 27 years. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
British Prime Minister David Cameron is seeking parliamentary support for his agreement with the European Union to stay within the 28-member bloc. While Mr. Cameron has the support of most of his cabinet, an influential Conservative, London Mayor Boris Johnson, has defected to the so-called Leave campaign. European analyst Ben Wellings of Australia's Monash University spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty about the defection.
Up until now, the Vote Leave campaign has been split between two major competing elements, both vying for the same goal but with different personalities who can't work with each other. Those major British politicians who've signed up to vote to leave the European Union so far have perhaps not had a kind of the charismatic appeal that might be necessary in a referendum. But Boris Johnson has that charismatic appeal. And he is the kind of politician that voters in the United Kingdom, especially England, warm to. And he is the kind of politician that voters listen to. So his announcement that he would join the campaign to leave the European Union is a major blow to David Cameron, and it's a major boost to the Leave campaign.
Well, Ben, he says he's not going to take part in the debate against members of his own party.
No, I think there's a risk here that the Conservative Party could become too divided on this. The ruling Conservative Party in the United Kingdom is split over the issue of whether to leave the European Union or remain in it. And I think that Johnson's got an eye to the future, where he has been touted as a potential successor to David Cameron, because David Cameron pledged in the election last year that he would stand down at the end of his second term. So we are thinking ahead as to who might lead the Conservative Party. And, of course, a referendum splits parties down the middle usually. And Boris Johnson might want to be seen to be a consensus candidate once this business of the referendum has been finalised in June.
Well, Ben, a latest poll says one-third of voters surveyed said Mayor Johnson would be important in helping them decide which way to vote.
Yes. He is certainly a very influential politician, even though he's best known for being mayor of London. He is a member of Parliament as well. He is charismatic. He's political theatre. He does unconventional things. But people do listen to him, and this might sway some undecided voters, of whom there are still a good 15 or 20%, and that could really sway the vote one way or another.
Is Mayor Johnson's opposition because of the deal that came out of Brussels?
Partly. On the other hand, Boris Johnson has been a critic of the European Union since at least 1989, when he went there as a journalist to cover its activities. It's not necessarily surprising that he's come out in favour of leaving the European Union. On the other hand, he was the last major political figure to decide which way to go. And so some people might sort of say, well, why did it take him so long to make his mind up? Clearly, he wanted to look at the deal that was made after the negotiations last week and has decided that now it is actually time to vote to leave the EU.
Ben Willing says the Leave campaign still has the uphill battle to convince a majority of Britons to vote yes to exit the EU. Coming up on International Edition, something new for couch potato gardeners. And what's behind a B.B. King tribute? A new tool gives the term homegrown a whole new meaning. It's called a farm cube and grows all sorts of vegetables right inside your house. VOA's Deborah Block has investigated the invention and joins us here in the studio. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Susan.
Well, what is this thing?
Well, what this thing is, this farm cube, which has been developed by a Taipei-based company, is 1 meter by 2 meter, 85 centimeters tall, and it's an enclosed ecosystem designed to grow food indoors. Every 6 weeks, this cube can grow between 100 and 200 vegetables, depending on the size of the, you know, the seedlings and, of course, the vegetables themselves.
Well, how does it work?
Well, the cube is really interesting. It uses hydroponics, which is growing plants without soil, and this is where the nutrients are dissolved in water and fed directly to the roots. Seedlings are placed in the cube that uses sensors. This is automated farming software that controls the correct amount of air, water, fertilizer, and LED lights as the plants grow. Now, a fan directs the airflow. And interestingly, red light promotes the growth of the seedlings, while the white light supports the established plants. All the water is purified by ultraviolet light, so it's safe, and there's no need to wash the vegetables because it's self-contained and there's not going to be any pesky bugs in there. Now, I should mention, with an app, you can also monitor the growing process yourself or make adjustments to the air temperature, humidity, light settings, and even more.
Well, you could grow tomatoes, celery, lettuce, just about anything?
It looks like you can, right now anyway. This particular cube that I saw had lettuce in it, but I think that in the future, this, you know, contraption might get even larger, and we'll see, you know, different types of small and large vegetables growing in it.
Sounds great. Well, how much does this thing cost? And that's bottom line. And how do I get one? I like the idea.
Well, I like the idea too, but I can't afford it.
Oh.
It's quite expensive. You know, all new technology is usually pretty expensive.
Uh-huh.
It's actually $1,000 each.
Yeesh.
That's each cube. Now,
that's pretty pricey lettuce.
It's pretty pricey anything right now. But I would imagine over time that this might go down. I mean, I see the day where, you might go into your kitchen and have a wall where these cubes might be lined up, and you just walk over there and get your lettuce and whatever else you're growing over there, your herbs, and
Your
vegetable pantry. That's exactly
and
right.
And it would be wonderful for people in nations where they have food shortages, because people could just grow it at home.
Yes. I mean, the fact that it's hydroponic, meaning it can grow in water, you don't have to worry about the soil. And also, it's completely self-controlled, so you're not relying on the sun or the rain and the other things that we deal with when we're trying to grow our vegetables and fruit, no matter what country we're in.
Well, this is going to make Mother Nature kind of mad, though.
Well, it might, but I think it's going to make a lot of people happy in the long run.
Right.
Unless there seems to be some sort of issues. I mean, we haven't talked about, are these seedlings going to just be from regular seeds? Are they going to be, genetically developed? I mean, that all remains to be seen.
Well, I interrupted you while you were speaking, so I'll let you finish my question, and that is, how do I get one?
For those people who can't afford it at this point, you can get it from the company Opcom Farm. That's OPCOM. The best way at this point would be to contact the company. You can look them up on the internet. They have offices in China, Japan, Germany, and the United States. And the company has started taking pre-orders, so it is on the market.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Deborah, for stopping by and sharing this. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Music are closely intertwined. The icon, Hank Williams Sr., one of the country music's most influential singer-songwriters, was first taught how to play the blues at 8 years old by one of his first mentors, blues musician Rufus Payne. So it was no surprise that the 2016 Grammy Awards turned to two of country music's superstars to pay tribute to blues legend B.B. King. VOA Music's Nikki Strong joins International Edition's Sarah Williams to discuss how it all came together.
Nikki, how did Chris Stapleton get chosen to do the B.B. King tribute at the Grammys?
Well, the L.A. Times reported that the executive producer of the Grammys telecast, Ken Ehrlich, saw a YouTube performance of Chris Stapleton singing The Thrill Is Gone, and he heard his vocals and was like, you know, that's the guy. I want him to perform. So he reached out to Stapleton, and he gave him the option of doing one of his own songs or doing the B.B. King tribute. And Chris Stapleton was like, B.B. King, of course. And he said secretly that's what he enjoys and wanted to do, the blues. It was a great opportunity for him. And he also said B.B. King's guitar was on stage at their performance as well.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Well, and also B.B. King being from the Delta in Mississippi.
Exactly.
There's that very similar. Yeah.
Yes.
So how did Bonnie Raitt get involved?
Chris Stapleton suggested it. He was like, hey, you know, Mr. Ehrlich, can you call up Bonnie and get her on board? And that's exactly what Ken did. And it happened. So it was at Chris Stapleton's suggestion. And they did a great job together on stage, along with the dynamic Gary Clark Jr. I think the performance is really fantastic. And I posted it on our Facebook page at VOA Music.
Tell us about Gary Clark Jr.
Okay, so Gary Clark Jr. He's an award-winning blues and electric guitarist. He's a singer as well. He's an actor. He was nominated for the Grammy Award for Best Rock Song in 2013. And then in 2014, he won the Grammy Award for Best Traditional R&B Performance. And then in 2014 and 2015, he won a Blues Music Award for Best Contemporary Blues Male Artist of the Year. So he's described as a blues rock artist, but his music, as you can tell from his awards, is informed by many different styles, including rock and soul and country and even hip hop and jazz. His latest project, The Story of Sonny Boy Slim, just sat in the number one spot on the Billboard Blues album chart. If you like Bonnie Raitt and Chris Stapleton and just good guitar playing and sweet singing, Gary Clark Jr. will fit nicely in your collection. And that's why the tribute was also so great. He added another dimension. And he is the youngest of the three who did the Grammys tribute, but I think the trajectory of his career is just as great, and they all stand on the shoulders of B.B. King. And he said that he wouldn't be where he was if it wasn't for B.B. King, and he said his first introduction to slide guitar was actually Bonnie Raitt.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's amazing. So there were all three Grammy winners on stage paying tribute to legend B.B. King.
Yep. Gary Clark Jr. has won. Chris Stapleton picked up two that evening for Best Country Album and Best Country Solo Performance. And Bonnie Raitt has 10. And B.B. the King himself has 15.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can hear more blues-infused country music on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on social media at VOA Music on Facebook and VOA underscore music on Twitter. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA underline IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Secretary of State John Kerry says the United States intends to engage in very serious conversations with China after civilian satellite imagery indicated that China deployed surface-to-air missiles on a contested island in the South China Sea. The island in question is Woody Island, part of the Paracel Island chain. The chain is claimed by China, Taiwan, and Vietnam. China has said it will not militarize in the South China Sea, but, Mr. Kerry noted, there is evidence every day that there has been an increase of militarization of one kind or another. It's a very serious concern, he said. China's latest apparent move on Woody Island follows other dubious activities by China in the South China Sea in recent months. In addition to the Paracel Island chain, China also claims sovereignty over the disputed Spratly Islands and, in an enormous dredging operation, has built several artificial islands in the area, some equipped with airstrips, which observers say could be used for military purposes. The United States takes no position on the sovereignty of disputed features in the South China Sea region, but has encouraged the countries involved to solve their disputes diplomatically and peacefully in accordance with international law. In January, the U.S. Navy sent a ship near Triton Island, part of the Paracel Island chain, in order, said the U.S. Department of Defense, to challenge excessive maritime claims that restrict the rights and freedoms of the United States and others. During a press conference at the conclusion of the recent U.S.-ASEAN summit in California, President Barack Obama underscored the U.S. and ASEAN's strong commitment to a regional order where international rules and norms and the rights of all nations, large and small, are upheld. Toward that end, President Obama emphasized the need for tangible steps in the South China Sea to lower tensions, including a halt to further reclamation, new construction, and militarization of disputed areas. He added that freedom of navigation must be upheld and lawful commerce should not be impeded. The United States, said President Obama, will continue to fly, sail, and operate wherever international law allows, and we will support the right of all countries to do the same.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.